we're here today to record our November podcast for Adelaide Plains Chapter and Verse. And it's only Michelle and I today because our wonderful leader is incapacitated.
She is. So I hope she listens to this and we do her proud and the show must go on.
The show must go on, yes. And hopefully she'll be back with us next month or we'll be able to take this to her.
That would be a wonderful idea.
Yeah, but she has read a poem for us to include, so she will be part of the podcast.
Which is wonderful. So to Carolyn, we hope you get better and that we have done you proud with this session.
Yes. So that's our main news, is that Carolyn's not with us from Adelaide Plains, chapter and verse. Poetry at the Pub was today, actually, and I did drop in, and Colleen, who's one of our founders, was the presenter. So I went along and listened to Colleen read couple of poems, which was nice.
And she's actually had some works published, book published. And not only is she a really wonderful poet, but she's an excellent workshopper and teacher. I didn't get a chance to go today, but I have been in the past. And she's really, really excellent at what she does. So that would have been fabulous.
Yes. Now, literary news, and because we've missed a podcast, and I've been collecting all the literary news, and it has been a very, very busy time. So I've got some interesting ones here. Going back to probably the big news, and that was the Nobel Prize winners, who were Olga Tokarczuk and Peter Handke, and I can't actually pronounce either, won the joint Nobel Prize in Literature. And the latter was fairly controversial, with a lot of writers objecting because of some of his political views have been rather questionable.
Oh, okay. So, that's interesting.
Someone rashly described him as a wonderful writer, but not such a wonderful human being. So that caused a lot of controversy.
If we only published books based on that, there probably wouldn't be too many books out there, would there? No, that would make a wonderful topic of debate, maybe, at one of our podcasts, Jeanette. That's a good idea.
We should talk about writers who probably aren't such nice people, but we love their work.
Exactly. And how do you separate the author from the work? And I think
a lot of the books we love actually have attitudes and views that we don't like.
Absolutely.
Especially, you know, the further back you go. It's a very interesting discussion. So, yes, we'll put that one for the future. And also the Booker Prize. Again, there were two winners. That was a shared Booker, which caused a bit of discussion. Margaret Atwood with The Testaments, which was predicted.
I was going to say, I mean, that was, I have to confess, I have not read The Handmaid's Tale. I did begin reading it. The writing itself was beautiful. My mum is a huge fan of Margaret Atwood's, a wonderful book called Cat's Eye. She thoroughly enjoyed, but I did remember thinking that when that came out, this is a shoo-in, but you know, she has worked very hard. She's been a prolific author. I suppose prolific, maybe that's not the correct word, but she has been an author of consistently high standard. So
I've only read The Handmaid's Tale, which I really enjoyed, but I do feel a little bit that the TV show has popularized the book because it struck a chord in the US because of the politics. I sort of feel that in a way she probably does deserve it again, but at the same time it's clouded, I think, by the TV show and the popularity of that. The other co-winner was Bernardine Evaristo with Girl, Woman and Other. I don't know much about it, but it sounds really interesting. Partly set Cornwall, Welcome to Newcastle 1905, Cornwall 1953, London 1980, Oxford 2008, Northumberland 2017. 12 very different people, mostly women, mostly black, who call Britain home. So that's the Booker Prize. There's also another one of interest. Prize, which is the Penn Literary Prize. It's been the time of literary prizes. Now, Penn is for political freedom for writers. It's
an organization.
And so the poet who won the prize then names a second prize winner. And the British poet was Sissy, and he chose a prosecuted Ethiopian writer and activist as this year's International Writer of Courage.
Oh, wow. So fabulous.
He recognises writers that speak up against oppression or...
The Miles Franklin Prize as well went to an Indigenous author this year. Am I correct in stating that? Because I've put that on my list, my Christmas list. Very, very interesting concept. I thought that was the Miles Franklin.
I'm looking it up.
Yeah.
Melissa Lukashenko, most prestigious, the Miles Franklin Award to acclaimed Indigenous novelist Melissa Lukashenko for Too Much Lit, published by the University of Queensland Press.
Yes, so I thought that one sounded really interesting. It's supposed to be quite funny, ironic, talking a lot about her life, and I think it's really important that Indigenous writers do get recognised, but that there's still some positivity in their writing. And I think for a lot of them it is moving forward a bit, still talking about the past, but where are we moving to? Yes, and I think that's really important for empowerment. So certainly with the Pen Prize, I think that's really important too, that empowering, that language of empowerment as opposed to oppression and victimhood. And that's it's wonderful that there's starting to be some recognition around some of those topics. So we will have some interesting reading over the holidays. Jeanette, we might have to start reading some of these things and talking about it.
Yes, indeed. Other interesting news, research into women's writing in England puts the first English writer back to the 8th century, so female writers in England back to the 8th century, which doesn't surprise me because all those women in monasteries had to do something, didn't they?
Yes.
So I'm sure they were writing. It's just that they're a little bit survived. So lost chapters of the world's first novel were found in a Japanese storeroom, a fifth part of the Tale of Genki. It was completed around 1010 and was written by a woman named Yuasaki Shikibu, and was found in a house in Tokyo. So there we go. We're talking about early women's writing.
Absolutely. Amazing. So that's fabulous. Novel. The world's first novel. 1010.
Yeah.
And here we are going to 2020. I think maybe they should look at publishing that. Having a bit of a revamp.
Just publish what they found of it would be fantastic.
Yeah, a bit of
would
a revamp.
Really interesting. Lots and lots of exciting new titles coming out. Probably The Secret Commonwealth by Philip Pullman, which is one that I'm really excited about, which is the second in the Book of Dust series. Okay, we'll move on because that's a lot of news. Oh, there was one other thing I want to talk about. The BBC have done a list, compiled a list of the 100 most influential books, and they've put them into a month-by-month order. So next year, I want to go through each month and discuss with you.
I would love to do that.
So we'll have a look, and that can be what we talk about in our podcast.
I would absolutely love to do that because
discussion.
I don't know if you recall, but there was the published book, 100 books you have to read before you die.
Yes. Yeah.
And I'd actually read quite a lot of them. And then there were others that I just thought,
I'd have to live a very long time. Yes.
And also, I just remember thinking, no, there are too many other wonderful books I want to read.
Yes.
You know, that to bother with some of those. But that's the beauty of it, isn't it? You know.
Looking at these books, there's some I think, I don't think they have a right to be in this. So it'd be fun to discuss what we
be completely objective. Mm. And what are the criteria around why a book goes on some of these lists? Because it would be very challenging to not be subjective, wouldn't it?
Isn't there such a thing as subjectivity? Nobody can be.
Exactly.
Or attempt to be, but even what we choose as this is what we think makes us subjective.
It's subjective. We're objectively subjective or subjectively objective. I don't know. That's true.
So we'll move on to our poet or writer discussion. Now, because Michelle is about to be a grandmother.
I am. Very exciting. In May, the baby will have a lot of books. The baby did get a lot of books. And I, last weekend, cleaned out Samuel's picture books and put them in a crate and took them over for the new bookshelf. And
well, that became my favourite. So Jez Albert, Eddie's teddy. Eddie's off to find his teddy. Eddie's teddy's name is Freddie. I could recite it all when they were little.
It was
some
gorgeous.
Of those books, I just love those books. I've got them all. I couldn't part with them.
Yeah.
But children's stories do need to be kept very simple, I think.
They do. And I mean, interestingly enough, I had the complete collection of Beatrix Potter in one job, which was my book. Samuel was really excited and he said, I remember these stories. I loved them. So some of those real classics, they are really timeless, aren't they, Jeanette? So
I love the Paddington books.
Oh, yes.
And I was about 9 when I discovered them in the school library. Really, I had the old Cat in the Hat book.
The Cat in the Hat.
My mother wouldn't buy them for me. She thought they were rubbish. But she bought one, The King, the Mice and the Cheese.
Oh.
And I love that book so much. It's almost worn out.
I've never heard of that one.
It's the only one that of all my children's books that I wanted to keep that I brought over with me. And the kids loved it too.
I'll have to borrow that. I always loved Dr. Seuss and Samuel the Lorax and All the Places You'll Go and that delightful nonsensical rhyming, which actually made beautiful sense. And Dr. Seuss, all his books, we talk about political.
Yes.
He, Yertle the Turtle, and all these books were very strong political messages, which, of course, the children don't get. But I find, like you said, with the picture books for smaller children, yes, keeping them simple without being simplistic and without dumbing it down. I certainly have read a few children's picture books where I've thought to myself, oh, you know, children love good language.
Which is why I didn't bring over any of the books that I had as a child. They were all like really awful children's books. That's why I love Dr. Seuss.
Yeah.
Because it was clever and witty and funny and it wasn't sugary.
I can understand that because one of the issues I have with a lot of picture books is I find them rather moralistic and preachy, some of the more modern ones. But my absolute favourite children's author. Mm. I teach grade 6-7s and I read these picture books to them and they love it. Mm. Bob Graham, Rose Meets Mr. Wintergarten, Queenie the Bantam, How to Heal a Broken Wing, A Bus Called Heaven. He has this delightful way of really tapping into the things that matter to young children. Mm. And yes, there's always a delightful story about community, being friends, not being judgmental, but it is done in this
subtly, so you don't feel like you're being preached to, because nothing puts children off than when they feel like they're being preached
absolutely.
To.
Absolutely. But there is a real danger when you are trying to give a message to children. If you're too preachy, they don't want to keep reading the message.
That's right.
And at the same time, we forget that we're actually adults writing for children and you need to really be looking at what is their world. And let's think about the books that our boys read over and over again. I mean, I'm sure your boys were as much into non-fiction as Samuel was. He loved non-fiction as much as he loved a storybook.
They mainly had storybooks when they were little.
Oh, is that interesting? Yeah, no, Samuel
mainly storybooks.
Loved both.
Always loved to be read to. All three of them. I found most children do.
I agree, and totally, yeah.
I read to children and they love it. And that was always my way of connecting to children, if I had to ever have anything to do with young children, was just read to them and they would love it.
They happily. Just little
children love to be read to.
And I have upper primaries, of course. I always read to them. I read a novel. We discuss it. I've discovered some beautiful, indie novels. The books, the Mockingjay books and things like that, I haven't read them, but they're very good. They're good literature. They encourage children to read the Harry Potters. They encourage children to read.
Well, they're fun. I enjoy them.
They're fabulous fun. But certainly start reading really, really young. Children will pick up on that language.
Very early on. We also had the tactile books.
Oh, gorgeous.
For babies. I love those tactile books where they can feel. So you're getting them involved, and I think that's a really good starting way. But yes, we were reading from the time they were born.
I
think they just love the sound of your voice. It's soothing.
And I mean, as you know, from my teacher head point of view, I can absolutely tell which children have been read to from a very early age and which have not. That's hugely important. And they just love that time with you. And Dad's reading, very, very important. And the other one was We're Going on a Bear Hunt. What a timeless classic.
We still do quote that at times. Oh, we're going on a bear hunt. We still say that.
Swishy, swashy, swishy, swashy. I mean, utterly delightful.
It was.
It is delightful. Yes, and I will, look, I confess, I still give Samuel picture books for birthday and Christmas.
I knew people that collected picture books. Our teachers didn't have children at the time.
Yeah.
And there was Sean Tan and Colin Thompson.
Oh, what was that
book? They had the most beautiful picture books. And Colin Thompson had one called The Staircase Cat, which was...
Samuel has that book. Gorgeous.
Loved that book. And the boys really loved that book. And that was when they were older too.
Some of the books too. There was another one by Sean Tan.
His books are fantastic.
They're just delightful.
Unfortunately, he was only starting to write when the boys were growing up. So we had a few for Owen. We'd get them out for Owen at the library. By that stage, I could no longer afford to buy all the books I wanted because the price of books went up.
Yes.
So much. They just didn't go up to keep pace with that. And I had to stop buying.
I was reading novels at 7 and 8 because I loved reading. That's what I did all the time. Yeah. And one of my aunties who lived in Port Lincoln knew I loved reading but didn't realise quite the level at which I was reading at. And at that stage, though, you could only get the Enid Blyton's and the Trixie Belden's. Unfortunately, literature has improved so much for children.
Young adult literature is just leaps fabulous. Bounds away from what we had when we were growing up.
Cannot rave enough about it.
Yeah.
But she sent me this book called Heidi and Clara, and it was a picture book. I remember my other aunties thinking, oh gosh, that's not quite what I read. I loved it. The illustrations. It was a really simple story of Heidi. Now, I'd already read the novel of Heidi, and it was one of my absolute favourites, you know. And so I've still got that.
Did they make a film of it?
Are they really? Yeah, loved Heidi. I loved Anne of Green Gables. So, yeah, I'm actually really excitedly looking forward to sharing my love of reading, my love of books. Mm. Samuel jokingly said, "Mum, I expected hundreds of books by now. I have held back a little bit, but I won't be for too long." Once the baby is born, I'm going to go and get her first library card. I'm so excited. Because our Gawler Library has a beautiful program for young children and toddlers.
Fantastic.
Wonderful. Honestly, fabulous thing. Take your children and grandchildren. It's a delightful program. Thoroughly enjoyable. So you can tell what Jeanette and I love talking about.
Yes.
Don't stop reading to your children. If you do have kids who, I mean, Samuel will kill me, but I did read to him as a teenager because he did have that dyslexia. Keep reading.
Years ago, when not long after we started going out together, I read all of Lord of the Rings, right from The Hobbit, similarly in Hobbit, Lord of the Rings aloud to Justin.
Oh, gorgeous.
And it was wonderful. It's just a lovely shared experience. And it's not that, you know, he loves reading too. But
Justin can read, everyone.
It's just a way of sharing the story together. It's a social thing. And I always intend to read more. And I sort of regret that I haven't done that because there's some books that really loan themselves to being read aloud as well.
They do.
And, of course, reading was entertainment. It was a shared activity. People did read aloud.
Oh, those gorgeous movies, you know, with Jane Eyre, where they go, "Let us take a turn. Would you please read out loud?
Yes.
Let us take a turn and read."
How reading was done. And gorgeous. That's why newspapers are written the way they were written back then. Just when you're reading them, you want to enunciate those words. They roll off the tongue. They were written to be read aloud.
Of course they were.
We view that as flowered now, that writing style, but it's actually written to be read aloud.
Oh, how delightful.
And it would be very entertaining when read aloud. So reading was something that was read aloud. And I think it's a shame we have lost that because I think reading aloud is a wonderful thing. Put off reading aloud at school, though, and all those kids that are...
Oh, me too. And did you read ahead?
Yeah, and then
you get busted.
The trouble for reading ahead because I can't help it.
I know.
So do you turn your students off from reading ahead?
No, I don't. I don't because...
What about reading under the table when they're supposed to be doing maths?
No, I would love... That was me. I think that's why I'm so appalling at maths because... And I also remember Scholastic books. My mum had very little money, but my brother and I were always allowed to order a book each. And I remember the book would come and the teacher would put it on the front by the blackboard and I would have to sit and stare at this book all day. And I mean, I'm still a very passionate reader, but...
There was children's picture books. There was very few books for older children. And then suddenly you're reading adult books.
Exactly right. You were reading adult books. And I...
Now... I was still reading. I'm just editing, writing, so it's my own work.
Yeah.
And not the time to read novels, but which is a problem as a writer because I don't read enough novels. And then, okay, so writer's tip was, Michelle, get in touch with the audience.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you particularly are interested in writing picture books, I mean, obviously a six-month-old can't tell you what's going on, but certainly a 4 or 5-year-old, read your script to them. So read to small children. Read to if you're writing for 10-year-olds, say to them, "Can I read you something? Can tell me what you think?" I think that's vital.
We'll move on. The word of the month.
Word of the month.
Word of the month. And this one, I found this and I thought it was hilarious. It's Dunnikin. And we all can guess in Australia. What that means. So there is the origin of the word.
That is fabulous.
Dunnikin. So it is an original English slang term.
Which is interesting because, of course, it came from English language, but we don't think of it like that anymore, do we? We truly think of it quintessential Australian.
Yes.
Australian slang. We do, don't we?
We do. It would have been probably early English convicts brought the word and it evolved. So, okay, so kin or ken is a pejorative form for house and it was originally English cant or dialect. So that's our word for the month, and I'll put in Carolyn's poem here.
Yep.
This poem is called No Place Like It. A frail cup of grass and twigs, bound together with spiderweb strength, strategically placed in just the right spot, The nest is home to the next generation of these widely loved songsters, black and white tail-flicking tweeters, tiny and brave, fearlessly harassing bigger, similarly huge avians, wannabe nest thieves, marauders, killers, predators. As life goes on for all, so too can come death. Frail but strong, labelled cheeky by humans, but is it cheeky or is it wise to live life the best way you can, bravely facing death with a flick of your tail and a delightful song?
Good.
So that was written in response to our homework.
Yes.
And that nest is on the other side of our house. There's a willy wagtail nest.
Right.
And I was pleased to see that they've come back again this year. Mm. And out there, I saw the nest with an adult willy wagtail sitting on it before I broke my ankle. And I wasn't able to see what happened after that because I was in hospital. But I'm really thrilled to have seen two young willy wagtails being fed by an older willy wagtail. So I think they were probably from that nest.
And you can hear the birds up there now. We're out at Carolyn's house because she can't come into us at the moment. So we're coming out to the mountain. Okay, thanks, Carolyn. And our listeners' challenge this month, because yesterday we were in Conlea Park, Gawler's beautiful parks, which are wonderful at this time of year.
We are very, very blessed in Gawler. You don't realise it, but I hadn't been to Clonleigh for a little while. I go to Deadman's Pass quite a lot, but I hadn't been for a while, and it was utterly delightful. Mm. And it was just beautiful to see the amount of people in the park having picnics. There was a Christmas activity. There was a first birthday party. There's some delightful playground, which I must say has wheelchair accessibility and the swings available for children with disabilities. So that was really fabulous, fantastic playground, wonderful. Yes. Go and visit our parks because they're gorgeous. Galahs birds. And did you notice that as well? And the galahs, and because so many people use the park, they're quite used to humans. So we were able to sort of sit and watch some galahs feeding off grass seeds, and they were pottering around, and they couldn't have been more than 10 metres away from us. Go check out the parks, get some inspiration for some work.
Okay, and thank you.
Thank you.